I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Football Rambles Guide 2. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Lucian Hadaraja.
I couldn't care less.
A treble is a rare thing in any league, but Jose Mourinho is a rare manager.
That was rude.
In any era.
But that was rude, we didn't need it.
In the 2009-10 season, his Inter side would win Serie A, the Coppa Italia, and the Champions League to become the first Italian club to complete the treble. Still at the peak of his powers, Mourinho assembled a team of warriors and set about making history. He would call on the prolific brilliance of Diego Milito, the guile of Samuel Eto'o, the craft of Wesley Snyder, the machine-like consistency of Javier Zanetti, and of course, Javier Zanetti's hair. Walter Samuel and Lucio formed one of the toughest defensive partnerships ever seen at the top level. A young Mario Balotelli had the world at his feet. Goran Pandev was there as well. Inter hadn't won Europe's elite competition for 45 years, and on their way to that historic victory, they'd vanquish old friends and old foes, infuriate pretty much everyone, and write themselves into legend.
History for Inter Milan. The first Italian treble winners. Maybe the last.
It was dramatic, it was attritional, and it was brilliant. So this is the Football Ramble's guide to Inter's treble winners. Well, 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 gentlemen, here we are, gathered once again to talk about something Jose Mourinho did.
And one of the good things he did.
Yes.
Yeah, with some horrible things along the way.
That's
who he is.
That's who he is, Jim, of course. And Inter, they are one of only seven teams to have captured the continental treble. And that includes, of course, the European Cup or Champions League, as it's known now. And the clubs who have done this, Ajax, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Celtic, Inter, Manchester United and PSV. We may add Manchester City to this list by the end of the week, of course. A treble is a very, very rare thing, as we said. Celtic did it in the 60s. Tended to be like one a decade. PSV was in the 80s. Manchester United in the 90s. And then it kind of, in the recent years, it's kind of gone a bit crazy. We've seen Barcelona do it twice. In recent seasons, we've seen obviously Inter are in there and Bayern as well. So I think sometimes we can forget just how rare it is, despite it happening a few times in the last sort of 10, 15 years.
I think it's probably indicative of the powerful, the teams with the most financial power consolidating that power, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
And I suppose that's why this stands out.
Yes.
Because Inter.
This wasn't was it?
Yeah, even when at the start of that season, midway through this season, there was a sense that, yeah, they're not that team. It was not something that was ever really on the cards until they got to the Champions League final. And you're like, oh, well, okay.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, 45 long years it had been for Inter. And, of course, Moratti, the owner, his father was the owner at the time in the 60s when Inter had won all the trophies under Herrera, of course. That was the glorious Inter side, and he wanted to emulate that.
And Inter are a funny team like
they
that.
They are.
Because they've gone a long, long time without kind of winning things at the level they would expect to. They see themselves as sort of put upon and unlucky and frustrating. And we don't necessarily see that so much, but they have a bit of a kind of hangdog mentality almost in some cases, because they've had these periods of underachievement, and they've, you know, obviously Juventus for various different reasons have dominated Italian football in different eras.
And Milan.
And Milan as well, of course. And Inter have been just behind them on that. And even with the huge outlay they've spent on players in the past, they've got lots of incredible stars. Some of the greatest players in the world played for Inter in the 90s in particular, and they still couldn't quite seem to manage to even win the league.
Yeah, but they've been playing catch-up for a while, weren't they? For many years, you know, people of our generation, you think AC Milan, you think Juventus in that time. And then a brief period, Lazio as well, when they had a lot of money. Even Roma won the league as well. And so when Mancini takes over at Inter, he won their first title, something like 18 years or whatever, and they were winning titles and they were back to the top, because, you know, the derby of Italy is Juventus versus Inter. It's almost like Manchester United and Liverpool, I suppose. And Liverpool went a long time without winning the league and whatnot, as we know.
Even that ascension from Inter came because of the Calciopoli scandal.
Sure.
And then the various other punishments that were moved out to the likes of...
But they couldn't crack Europe. They weren't getting near Europe's top prize, and there was a frustration there. Mancini himself got frustrated, and Moratti got frustrated, and he would leave the club. You know, so they were dominating domestically. So Mourinho, when he comes in to Inter, he comes into a side who are sitting at the top, which, you know, wasn't that used to that situation, I suppose. I mean, he was with Porto and Chelsea. You know, Chelsea not won a league title, you know, not won the Premier League until he took over. So he goes in there, and there are some Inter fans thinking, all right, go on, what have you got? Because he wins the league in his first season there by something like 10 points. Mm. Wins it quite handsomely.
Champions League was the same old story, though, wasn't it?
Champions League was the same old story, and people thought, oh, right. Well, it was almost a case of, is that it?
Mm.
You won the league by 10 points. Yeah, we've done that.
Yeah.
That's in the bag, all right? We want the European glory.
Which is, you know, that
and
makes
my,
it sound
he,
like
he delivered it.
Indeed. But that makes it sound like Serie A is easy to win, but you have to remember the context of Calciopoli and how Inter was suddenly, they were the favourites.
They were.
Also, it's important to say that it feels like now more than ever, there is an understanding that, for example, if Arsenal won the league this year, no one would expect Arsenal to challenge for the Champions League the year after. No.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Whereas back then, mm-hmm. you know, even that's only, you know, just over a decade ago, mm-hmm. there was a sense that if you won one of those top three yeah. leagues, that, right, you're in for a shout. You're in with a shout then, because you've yeah. had to beat the yeah. teams in your league who are of a certain quality and therefore mm-hmm. could command that kind of real estate at the top of the European game.
Yeah, well, Mancini won multiple titles, so he's had various yeah. goes. It's not, as you say, a one-off. There they are in the Champions League again, and they seem to have a bit of a ceiling there. But then, as we say, enter Mourinho. The first season, it's out the way, they're the champions, and then the second season is where we see it. So, I mean, this Inter side, I mean, the names just reel off the tongue for me. I can name the starting 11 straight away. This team is one of the most outstanding sides in my life.
Yeah, but they're a funny team, though, aren't they? They're not the Galacticos.
They had to be housed... Well, sort of, rather, they were housed at a very specific moment in all their different careers.
Yeah.
And they were never going to stay there, mm. including Mourinho himself.
Yeah.
But the moons aligned, didn't they, in that
totally.
Way?
Totally. It was glorious. There was, it's, you know, I've said before, you know, I prefer AC Milan. You know, they were the team that I sort of, you know, would think of and think of the romance and the glory and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. This was a black ops team.
Totally, yes. Yeah. Abso-bloody-lutely. Yeah, if there was a job to do, like if Sylvester Stallone... He, you know, if he was a football manager, he'd manage these guys.
Yeah.
Proper expendables kind of stuff. They were hard bastards, but they had quality and craft as well. And incredibly, of course, in that summer of 2009, their best player, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he leaves.
But that is the catalyst of all of it, isn't it? Mm. Because this deal was extraordinary at the time. I remember all of us being baffled. So the deal was worth, I remember the number being thrown around was 80 million at the time because it included... basically, Inter sold Zlatan Ibrahimovic mm-hmm. to Barcelona, and in return, they got 46 million euros, something like that, and Samuel Eto'o.
Yeah.
And Eto'o is far from a busted flush.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
He's just won the treble.
Turned so many heads, and I think the issue was that Eto'o didn't want to play out wide so that Messi could play centrally, and that had caused a little bit of friction. He then moves to Inter, where Jose Mourinho immediately convinces him to do exactly that, and
well,
it's fine.
But they did, so they had two different systems often. So in Serie A, they often played like a 4-4-2 with a diamond sometimes. But you're right, in European competition, he was like, you are going to have to do that job again. But again, the way they... But this is where Mourinho's sort of silver tongue comes into it. That he can convince and he can galvanise and get people... I mean, how they got Eto'o, you know, when they were courting him, Materazzi messaged Eto'o saying, you know, if you come here, we'll win everything. And Mourinho sent Eto'o a photo of the number 9 jersey saying, you know, it's waiting for you. So there's all this going on. So once you're in...
Imagine being charmed by those two individuals.
Oh, it's a proper... Bad cop, awful
totally,
cop.
Totally, totally. But you're in, you know, if you're with them, who's going to stab you in the back?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, there you go.
Probably them. Yeah.
But I think that was... But
lovely
that was...
shop you've got here. Could do with some protection, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, see you later.
Yeah, right, yeah. But I mean, you know, at times Eto'o was playing right back in those games when they were under siege. And of course, they were under siege because Jose Mourinho teams and Walter Samuel and Lucio and all of them, they love it up them.
They absolutely
love
their
it
favorite.
Up them.
Your worst nightmare is their holiday, isn't it? They love playing under those like pressure conditions. But the thing is, obviously, Diego Milito's there as well. So we'll come on to how brilliant he is, because that certainly deserves its own breathing space. But they go from having Zlatan to having Diego Milito and Eto'o. And that it's an upgrade. It's twice as many blokes.
And with
I think the thing we should say, though, about Zlatan, specifically for people who don't remember that era or weren't around for that era, he had outgrown Inter.
Yeah.
There was a feeling of that.
But Guardiola wanted Ibrahimovic. Yeah. Ibrahimovic's stock now was Haaland before he signed the City.
Yeah. But although it was never a good fit, was it? Because
personalities clashed.
If anything, that shows how, well, I suppose the level that Ibrahimovic was at, that even Guardiola thought, you know what, I do have my beliefs.
Yeah.
I'll he make is this work. Fucking good.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And it didn't work out that well, of course, as we all know. But with those players moving around, you know, because there was some big players at Inter still. Luis Figo is still knocking about. He would move on. Patrick Vieira left in January. It was some of them in the twilights of their careers. But a lot of this squad and a lot of these big players for Marina were in their 30s. And some of the money used from that Ibrahimovic deal, you mentioned Melito, Thiago Motta.
Yes.
I mean, what a man to have
really
in your team.
One of those repeatedly sung unsung heroes, Thiago Motta. Goran, bit of a Makaleli type.
Yeah, exactly. Goran, a different type of player, slightly. But yeah, I see what you mean. Goran Pandev, Wesley Sneijder, Lucio. I mean, just...
See, Wesley Sneijder is interesting because, and again, this sort of is... The impact comes from Pep Guardiola's Barcelona because they're so good. Real Madrid are like, we're not having this.
Yeah.
We're gonna do Galacticos 2, yep. Get the last two Ballon d'Or winners, which was Kaká and Ronaldo. Mm. So that means that Wesley Sneijder and Arjen Robben become surplus to requirements at Real Madrid. So Inter get Wesley Sneijder for an absolute bargain and he's fired up. He's got a point to prove. He signs one day, 24 hours later, he pulls the strings in a 4-0 win over AC Milan.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And that's incredible. Lucio as well is knocking on at that point. But Mourinho, essentially, he knew he needed a really mobile centre-back. Mm-hmm. He figured Lucio's probably got a couple of seasons of that left in him. And it's what we were talking about before, isn't it? It is this bespoke... Mm-hmm. team for now, which Mourinho's genius has always been best expressed when he's able to get those players together and not care about the future because he's not going to be there.
Yeah.
The best I can possibly have now is what he's really, really good at identifying. And he did it to a T here. This was a finely tuned machine that would only have worked in that time.
Absolutely. And those players that we mentioned, Eto'o and Sneijder, these are top quality players.
Yeah.
But they have been frozen out or they've been, you know, as you say, they're angry, they're wound up, and he's like, channel
Pandev,
that.
Another one at Pandev, Lazio.
At Lazio, he was sort of frozen out, wasn't he? And again, Mourinho's like, oi, you come play for me, big boy, because I'll show him. But Diego Melito scored 30 goals in all competitions that year. And trust me, kids, that's a good tally of goals, okay?
Yeah, yes.
the way he finished the season in particular, because Roma pushed them, that season. They only won it by a couple of points. But they need to go and, was it beat Siena? Was it on the last
Well, they had a four-month period, I think, well, sorry, three-month period between January and April where they were all over the place.
Yeah.
In the league.
That's right. They were floundering. And that
back when you could do that.
Yes. Yeah. When you could take a month off during the season. Oh, we'll be all
they
right.
They dropped a couple of points across three games and they lost by 8 points.
Yeah. Well, there was that period, wasn't there? You're talking about around, was it sort of winter? I mean, was it in February when they were playing Sampdoria? And Mourinho, again, master of the dark arts. And sadly, we've seen that with Roma and obviously the knock-on effect, you know, with Anthony Taylor. And so we can joke and laugh about it, but sometimes...
There is a sinister side to it as well.
Indeed. But back here, it didn't sort of come across as that. It became, you know, this is a guy who's galvanising his team and so on and so forth. And there was that game against, I think it was Sampdoria, who, believe it or not, I know they've just been relegated in Serie A, but they were going for Champions League places then. Inter were down to 9 men for a while and managed to get a draw. You know, Sampdoria couldn't score against them, but Mourinho did that handcuff gesture.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Where he's basically saying, we're handcuffed, the referees are against us. I think he gets like a 3-game ban for it or something.
I mean, it's a hot topic in Italy at the time as well, so he knows exactly what he's doing.
He knows, and he's playing... You know, he's playing them all for fools. It galvanizes. They get back on the horse and off they go.
A little horse. It was a big horse at the time.
A huge horse, but Diego Melito was very much riding that horse all the way. he scores the winner in their last game of the season to clinch the league. He scores the goal in the Coppa Italia final against Roma, I think it was, and then scores the two goals in the Champions League final. He was glorious that season. And with Mourinho, in that top level of football, and especially that style of play with Mourinho, chances are fairly few and far between. You've got to be like a shark. You've got to take absolutely everything. And he was lethal, absolutely lethal. But the fact is, they often played, as I say, two or even three strikers up front, you know, but he was the man on point.
The finishes in the Champions League final were both exceptional.
Beautiful.
So good.
It's just the delay for the first one was gorgeous, yeah.
And it really pissed me off at the time that he wasn't even mentioned in the Ballon d'Or running. I know the Ballon d'Or is funny because it's a calendar year and all that, and individual awards in football and blah, 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 blah. But he still annoys me now, actually, on his behalf, quite oddly.
But he was basically a victim of Guardiola's Barcelona, and not just because of who ended up as that top three, essentially, because it was what, Messi, Xavi, Iniesta. Certainly Messi is number one.
But you see the top, the top, I think, was it 23 names they've got on there? Not mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
But also, because the other point to Guardiola's Barcelona was the fact that because they were changing the game in such a way, people started losing respect for people who just scored goals.
Yeah, like
he was simply regarded as a striker.
Yeah.
And you know, that became a way of describing someone who doesn't offer much elsewhere.
Well, perhaps you're right when you say he doesn't offer much elsewhere, because the Argentinian players in this Inter squad would once a week put on a barbecue for all the players. And this shows you the great togetherness that this side had. Again, Mourinho pulled them all together and they were in it. And there was, you know, and this kind of team building is very, very important. So obviously Javier Zanetti, the captain of the side, organised the barbecues, right? Javier Zanetti's, we're having a barbecue. Yeah, fine. Whatever, I'll be there. You know, you're not messing
with When you look at that squad, he is very much the dad of that squad.
Mm. Yes. But and I think you could predict this before I tell you. Esteban Cambiasso, he would go and pick up the meat, right?
Yeah.
Presumably he just killed it.
And Milito would eat it?
Yeah. Yeah. Walter Samuel.
Two-footed lunge of a cow.
Walter Samuel was the asador, or the grill master, of course.
Like it.
And according to Dejan Stankovic, Milito ate, and that's it.
Oh, fantastic.
You could predict it all.
Yeah, you could.
He sets it up, and Milito's like, what? This is a part
Feed
of the,
me.
This is the part of the process, right?
Yeah.
There's literally no point in this. None of us are going to eat
Mourinho's it. Mourinho's tricked them all into doing this without even knowing.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Mourinho's been in their ear. That cow slagging you off the other day.
Yeah.
Was it a cow? Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible, yeah.
He thinks you can't eat all of it.
Yeah. But Inter's progress through the Champions League, so it took them a while to get going.
Mm, we saw them lose to Barcelona in the group stages. We were there.
We saw
all those Spanish men were smoking weed, shelling peanuts and laughing every time Barcelona did something good.
And
that's how football works in Spain.
Indeed it does. Or specifically the Nou Camp.
Yes.
But they were calling Mourinho the translator. They were booing him. They were jeering him, all that kind of stuff. Fair to say he would have the last laugh that season. But Barcelona was streets ahead of them.
Yeah.
I mean, this was almost peak Guardiola Barcelona. They would find that peak probably at Wembley against Manchester United in the final the next season.
But it
did look like Barcelona were going to be the first side to retain the Champions League.
Yeah.
Of course, it would be Real Madrid and under Zidane years later. But when they beat Manchester United in the final in 2009, again, we were also at Jim, privileged to be there, they looked like they completed football. Mm-hmm. How do you counteract this? And when Inter and Mourinho go there, they didn't really offer that much, to be honest.
No, it was a fairly routine team.
Very routine.
Win.
I mean, Messi
and Pedro.
Messi and Ibrahimovic didn't even play.
Yes.
And they were just...
Which was gutting.
It was. But they were just, you know, knocking it around, and it was a lovely old job. Inter, they before that, they drew their first three group games. They were on the verge of heading out before Schneider bailed them out against Dynamo Kiev. And they weren't having a good time. They drew away to Rubin Kazan. Mourinho tells a funny story about Balotelli that day, because apparently all the strikers were injured and he needed Balotelli.
Yeah.
And Balotelli had got booked in the first half. And he said, I had, you know, you've got like 12 minutes to do a half-time team talk, realistically, once the players come in and before they leave. And he said, 11 and a half minutes in that dressing room, I was convincing Balotelli not to get a second yellow card. 15 minutes after the second half, boom, send off. But they managed to get a draw.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
But before that semi-final, they play Chelsea. And Chelsea, under Ancelotti, were a good side. And to be honest, Pope, people would have fancied them against Inter. And Inter win the first leg 2-1, a slender win, of course. And now we know that that's more than enough for Mourinho.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just if you lose just by an odd goal to Mourinho side in the first leg, you're done for. And against Chelsea, away at Stamford Bridge, of course, all the narrative around Mourinho. And I can remember him saying before the game, I normally get what I want at Stamford Bridge.
Well, that was the
that's a
famous line.
That's a famous line, isn't it?
Because all the Chelsea fans got annoyed by that, and he did it anyway.
Yeah, and that's true. Well, but what we didn't know is he said to his players before the match, "No team I coached can beat me." And suddenly, this is where
that gets in your head, doesn't it? Well, like I've planted something within you.
Yeah.
I've got a kill switch that you don't know about, but I'm going to activate in you.
But it gets,
and so it proved.
But even saying that, it gets the hairs on the back of your neck. This is years ago.
Why are you still in the laundry basket? That was an old thing.
I've just grown accustomed to it. Wheeling in and out. Imagine that. See, that's what he should have done. Out for the second half, they wheeled him to the dugout in the laundry basket. That was a lovely nod. But the players responded. And this is where you see Inter ignite. This is the moment. Because Eto'o said that when he said that, we went out on the pitch with a different determination. We weren't just playing for ourselves, we were playing for our coach as well. That's it when their season suddenly comes. They beat Chelsea away. They then get CSKA Moscow in the quarterfinal. Again, routine stuff. Win, you know, the legs by the odd goal and all the rest of it. And that's when they get going.
Well, it's interesting because if you see the way that people like Frank Lampard, John Terry and Drogba speak about Mourinho when he was at Chelsea that first time, they basically say when he left, because they were all together, when he left, they were so shocked by it that they were like, they almost felt like they'd wronged him in some way. They're like, oh, he didn't say goodbye. That's a bit odd.
Yeah.
So
Eden Hazard, when Mourinho left Chelsea under, you know, he won them the league and then he got sacked because so Eden Hazard apparently was messaging him going, I'm really sorry I let you down and all this. That is the effect he has on a lot of players.
But this was the first time where it was quite public in the way that, like, he wouldn't really interact with them, you know, like he'd ignore them going down the tunnel and stuff give them a pat here and there, and they'd like look at him to say whether they should say hello or stuff like that.
He did
perpetuate that idea that, like, maybe not quite a kill switch, that he had something over them.
Yeah.
In the build up to
the
this
spell he
fixture.
Casts is quite stunning. And of course, when they go and play Guardiola's Barcelona in that semi final, it comes after they've had a bit of a blip in Serie A and so on. I mean, they won 5 out of 14 Serie A games between mid January and mid April. There's that blip.
Yeah.
But they come through it. You know, and Roma have a couple of sloppy results and eventually into win the league.
Well, I think that what I was referring to earlier, it's interesting to me that you've not mentioned that there, is the Icelandic volcano.
Yes.
Well, so we come to the semi-final and they play the first leg at home. And of course, Barcelona have to take a 30-odd hour coach journey to get there. So their preparations are all to cock.
Yeah.
You know, not through no fault of their own. And some people say, oh, don't take away Mourinho's tactics and the disciplined performance. No, no, no. Yeah. But both things happened.
Definitely. Barca go 1-0 up, though.
They do.
And obviously Inter fight back. And, you know, particularly when they score the third goal, they know that they're in the driving seat there massively. And it's so fascinating, this situation, because we will never know what would have happened had the Icelandic volcano not intervened. but no team in history wouldn't be disadvantaged by that.
Yeah. Also, if we didn't have the Icelandic volcano, we would never had that bloke interrupting the Sky News reporter at, was it Edinburgh Airport, just shouting, "I hate Iceland!"
Good point.
Yeah, see, very so, good point, yeah. You know, we, in a way, we're thankful. A friend of mine also got an extra week's holiday in Tunisia. Lovely old job.
Well done to Inter Milan and Marcus's mate.
Yeah.
Beneficiaries.
Indeed. But so, yeah. But even though that they lost 3-1 Barcelona, you have to remember at the time that Barcelona, everyone loved them other than Real Madrid fans. They were the absolute darlings of football.
The away goal felt like an advantage that even at 3-0, you would have thought, oh, okay, right. It is Barcelona, though. They can pump teams 4-0 if they want to. Mm-hmm. Well, the away goal just gave you a bit, well, moved you a bit closer to that thought that they were going to try out. Well,
they felt invincible at the time, didn't they? In completely. The way City do now. Exactly the same.
Yes, absolutely. It just, you thought, oh, they're just prolonging the agony or the I don't know, the task or whatever for Barcelona. They lose the second leg 1-0, of course, which is enough. And 10 men for most of the game.
Yeah, and I mean,
Barca had 86% possession.
Do you remember Sergio Busquets? You know, after Thiago Motta is near him, he, you know, rolling around on the floor, takes a little peek out from under his hands just to check the referee sent him off. It all looks very, very snide.
Yeah.
Then obviously they win the game. Barcelona play the club anthem immediately as Inter players and staff are running onto the pitch. Mourinho's pointing at someone up in the gods at the Camp Nou. We're not sure.
No, the Inter fans are up there. That's who he's pointing at.
They put the sprinklers on.
Yeah.
Barcelona take it really, really badly. It's really petty, really tetchy.
Yeah.
Mourinho talks about the using those sprinklers to wash off the blood.
Yeah. Well, Mourinho also said, I didn't even know the sprinklers were on. I mean, when they win that game, I've said it time and time again on this podcast, and of course, at the Guardiola Mourinho episode, we covered this a lot as well. But it is one of my favourite celebrations from the history of football. Like, it's just the way he knows they're going to win the final. Because often you get that, don't you, when you have a massive celebration if you win the semi-final, you think, was that their final?
Mm.
No. He knew that they would beat Bayern in the final.
Which is
Champions League. At the Bernabeu, by the way. But the way that the final whistle goes and the way he's, like, on the other side of the pitch, how is he that kind of pace? Etu would have been proud of, you know. But he runs around like he's just scored the winning goal.
He must have been stretching during injury time.
Yeah.
Because for a man of his age at the time, set off.
He's often, you know, got the poker face and all that on. But imagine the emotions that are jangling around inside him. Because he knows, if we do this, my name is in the history books forever.
But the other thing about, you know, Mourinho talks about the game afterwards, about how when they went down to 10 men, he said he didn't want the ball.
Yeah.
So Barcelona want us to have the ball.
Yep.
Let's just get rid of the ball, essentially. We don't need it. It doesn't matter how little of the possession stats we get at the end, we're going to win the game.
14%. It's an incredible way to live your life.
But if you look at the... when you rewatch the, like I said, the longer highlights of this game, there are moments when Barcelona get through into the final third, having beaten the man and just have the defence in front of them.
Mm.
Can't find that final pass because a combination of either Christian Chivu nipping at Messi's heels or Walter Samuel just jumping in the way of, like, lanes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd clearly done their homework there. And, like, we're not going to stop them man-to-man, but we can stop where the ball's going to go.
Yes.
And they did that brilliantly.
It was inglorious bastard stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. Perfect.
It was. Yeah. And I think that defence, the way they stood and they were so airtight, you know, you remember the great Milan defence, of course, with Baresi and Maldini and all the rest of it, you know, just you couldn't get through. It was like this to do a sort of a, you know, an Alamo job at the Camp Nou like that was incredible. And then of course the final against Bayern at the Bernabeu, where Mourinho would be managing soon after that.
Yeah, and also, I mean,
it was fairly straightforward.
It was fairly straightforward, but Bayern are one of those teams with a mythology around them as well. This, the idea that anyone's going to go and be favourites against Bayern seems like a trap, doesn't
Louis
it?
Louis van Gaal's Bayern.
Louis van Gaal's Bayern.
Iron Robin was playing.
And of course, Louis van Gaal was one of the people that had been a big influence on Mourinho and at Barcelona. There was so much story to this season.
Yeah, it was mentioned, Milito scoring two lovely strikers' goals. Schneider assisted the first goal back at the Bernabeu against his old team, at the place.
In the home of his old team.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And Schneider would go on with the Dutch at the World Cup, of course, to the final as well. Amazing year.
Classic final.
And he finished fourth. He finished fourth in the Ballon d'Or running, which... Again, you sort of think to yourself, what have you got to do, you know? But anyway. But Mourinho and those players, you see them celebrating on the field after. But it was job done for Mourinho. And he basically just rides off into the night.
Yeah, I mean, so the context behind this is absolutely fascinating because he would go on to join Real Madrid. Mm. And he said he knew that if he went back to Milan, they'd convince him to stay there.
Yeah.
He'd turned down Madrid a couple of times before. He thought, whoever you are, you can only do that so many times. Mm-hmm. He didn't go back to Milan. He stayed in Madrid. He didn't even get onto the team bus.
Yeah. I think he would subsequently go back, of course, and he had to do it with Moratti. But that was when the dust had set. It had finished.
Well, you know...
And that's when he felt he could do it, because they knew, look, I'm here now and you're there and now I can come back.
Well, Jim, your point at the very start of this, like, this was the A-team. These were, a group of mercenaries. I mean that in the army sense, weirdly, rather than the football sense. This really did feel like, even if he actually did do it in terms of not going back to Milan, all those players went off and did their own thing after that. They got their last big payday.
That's right.
In terms of satisfaction.
Yeah.
And that Champions League medal. They all then went their separate ways.
I mean, in a way though, it's like that can't be topped. That's surely the most satisfying way to have your moment in the sun. It's like it's impossible for this to be better. So actually. Whatever I do next is fine, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. And I think, Moratti sold the club only a couple of years, two or three years after this. He almost felt like, that's Inter Milan or Internacional, should I say. Thanks very much. Good night. The club was like, we've got what we came for, kind of thing, And we haven't even mentioned, Kivu, who was a great fullback, and Douglas Maicon, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah. Maicon scored that goal against Juventus in the league, where they're up against it a little bit. It's 0-0. They need a win. Ball comes out to him on the edge of the area. He takes three touches with it in the air and then rifles it in for like an incredible volley. Mm. Just do yourself a favour and look it up. It's one of the most beautiful goals you'll see.
Yeah.
They had a lot of moments like that.
Well, and that's it. We can talk about them being hard and so on and whatnot, but with Schneider, with the front three, with the fullbacks,
a lot of
quality and a lot of technical skill and ability and so on.
The power of volcanoes on their side.
The power, indeed.
You wonder what Mourinho did, don't you? You still think, that can't be coincidence. Has he gone over there on an international break, put something in that?
But that image of him hugging
a world with the underworld.
with the hug Mourinho and Materazzi share. I always thought that was when he's walking away from the club at Milan. It would be years later.
So did I.
You didn't realise that is in Madrid, that hug. Materazzi revealed what he said to Mourinho in that moment. I told him, you're a shit. You're going and you're leaving us with Benitez. I'll never forgive you for it.
I mean, he clearly didn't. There was no... They didn't know, but this is...
I think this is where the myth takes over.
And he said, don't worry, I'll take the piss out of him next year and he'll be sacked in a bit.
Yeah, indeed. But that hug, when you see the emotions, they knew. But that's
Materazzi hugging him. Is this why you didn't ever return to you when we did? Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, when you have a team like that, there's such togetherness. And you just talk about the barbecues. Then you talk about the performances, the results, the trophies. Like, what do you do at that moment? As you say, Jim, it was like the one final job for a number of them at that level. Of course, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be glorious or inglorious, depending on how you look at it. And it's going to be the best season of most of their professional lives. But that means it will quickly sprout up and then abruptly it will finish.
Yeah.
And it must be so gutting that you think this is over. It'll never be this good.
There's a poetry to the fact that Mourinho isn't on the bus at the end.
Mm.
You know, it was that instant. It was that quick that this moment has shone really, really brightly, and now this part of our lives is over because the architect of it isn't even here.
Yeah.
I parked the bus, now you have to drive it away.
Exactly. There you are, you see. Materazzi would set up a WhatsApp group for this team subsequently. And Julio Cesar, the goalkeeper, who played his part very much in that season, said about it, "The most active guy on it, the one who is messaging and joking the most, is Jose."
Well, so this is the thing, because if you are a supporter of a club like that, one of the things that, you know, if it happens to come and go, one of the things that you hold on to as you get older and watch your team either continue on that trajectory or fall away, and more often than not, it's falling away at that level, certainly when you reach that height, is you want to think that that bond between the players still exists.
And
sometimes that manifests itself where they come out at half time, they might do a podcast somewhere or whatever. But because of the nature of that squad, it's really hard to imagine them like having much in common beyond that and therefore still being in touch. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them from South America as well. So if they've gone and, you know, you go living all over the world, all that kind of stuff.
Famously, the relationship between the countries in South America are always great, aren't they?
Very good, very much so.
It's worth pointing out that Marko Arnautović was in that squad. Can imagine him being very, very vocal on that WhatsApp group.
Well,
as
didn't
well.
He have put on his
I
boots?
Think they would have been, they would not have invited him to it.
Yeah.
Or they'd have invited him originally and then kicked him out.
They invited him for 56 minutes, which I think was the total football he played that year. Still, though, part of the squad.
Didn't he have something on his boots, didn't he? 2010 Champions League winner or something. He didn't play a single minute in the competition.
He's technically right, though.
Mm-hmm. No, he's not. If he didn't play a minute in the competition.
Yeah, but you're in get a medal.
But
right?
You're in the squad. You're in the squad.
I suppose.
Anyway, you see.
Why are you defending Marko Arnautović?
Yeah, it's a strange one, that.
Shame to end on that, though. But then, there we are, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us on another Football Ramble Guide 2. Remember, we want your ideas for what our next guide should be. Email us, show at footballramble.com, or tweet us at Football Ramble with your suggestions. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you.
And thank you, Inter 2009-2010. See you soon, everybody. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Football Rambles Guide 2. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushan Handaraj. Don't do that, it's my name.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. Why One Question Time is a Stack production.